Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop on this Food Friday, November 1st already. I'm Ray Graff. Bruce Weinstein and Mark Scarborough are back today. They have written over 36 cookbooks, sold well over a zillion of them. Today, they're here for a little pregame Thanksgiving dinner planning. We'll find out what these guys are up to. They'll talk turkey, and we'll take your general cooking questions as well. The number to call is 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Bruce Weinstein and Mark Scarborough, your calls coming up on Vox Pop right after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Today we welcome back Bruce Weinstein and Mark Scarborough. They produce a popular podcast, Cooking with Bruce and Mark. They write a lot of cookbooks. In my estimation, they know a lot about cooking, almost everything. We'll do some advanced logistical planning for Thanksgiving today. Find out what these guys are up to. You have a general cooking or recipe question, it's a fair bet you'll get an interesting answer. May not be right, but I assume it'll be right. Give us a call, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Bruce Weinstein, Mark Scarborough, welcome back, guys.
Hey, Ray, how are you?
Hey, Ray.
You know,
how's it going?
It's been like a couple weeks since you put out a cookbook. What's going on?
Yeah,
do you have writer's block?
What's slacking off. Yeah. You know, I mean, you know, after 36, you kind of have to slow up a bit. But we want to talk about turkeys. We want to talk about Thanksgiving.
Just turkey? I want to talk about Thanksgiving.
Okay.
Thanksgiving
there's
does
something
not
else?
Have to
so
mean
what? We're going to talk about family fights and how I hate my mother and all that. You mean that stuff?
You have come with a serious purpose today, Scarborough. I can tell. You're like a football player right before the game.
I'm out.
You got your game face on, man.
I'm in.
All right. So, so Thanksgiving, love the holiday. It's not crazy about turkey.
Okay. Then we got to start with that. Why don't you like turkey?
I don't know.
I love turkey.
I mean, it's okay.
Turkey is something I make all year round. It is not something that should be just for the holidays. You should throw a turkey in the oven at least once a month. Because you'll have leftovers for lunch, because it's a delicious meat. It's like,
and you know what makes turkey delicious, don't you?
The turkey?
Pinot Noir.
I don't drink wine.
Oh, okay, a beer.
Bourbon.
How's that? Dr. Pepper, bourbon.
All right, but, so the Dr. Pepper, that's a great idea.
Why do people freak out over making a turkey? Maybe it's because they only do it once a year.
I've never made a turkey. I don't freak out.
You get towards Thanksgiving, and people start going, oh, I got to practice. You start getting all those newspaper articles on doing your practice Thanksgiving dinner. What is there to practice?
People practice Thanksgiving dinner?
No. Oh, my gosh. It's a thing.
It costs $400 to do Thanksgiving dinner.
Oh, my
gosh. You're
going
to have a practice?
Go on Instagram Reels right now, and you will see dozens of people posting their practices.
And here's the thing.
They're warm-up.
Weird.
Shove a turkey in the oven, and it gets cooked, right?
Right.
That's really how easy it is to cook a turkey.
Right.
I mean, especially these days, if you just go to your local supermarket, look at the packaging on most like store brand chicken and store brand turkeys, and it's going to say contains up to 15% of a solution.
Right. And I've seen that. Mm-hmm. Usually I have to buy the turkeys, and then that's it. That's the last I'm allowed in. I did throw my back out getting a turkey out of the fridge. I'm not joking. A couple of years ago, and I just went over to get it, and then suddenly it locked up.
Mm.
So therefore, I'm against Thanksgiving and turkey. So
I like that.
That solution they stick into the turkeys,
yeah,
that keeps it moist.
Right.
You can't overcook a turkey like that. It's like,
all right, so let me ask you a question.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, you got all this salt water, right? Mm-hmm. Saline
yeah.
solution,
basically. That's what's shoved in it, yeah.
Should you brine a turkey?
Not if it says may contain 15% of a solution, because it already is brined. You know what other turkeys you don't brine? Kosher turkeys.
Why?
Because to make a kosher turkey, any kosher bird, after they slaughter it, they salt it, and it is dry brined. So it already is. If you brine a kosher turkey, it's going to be way too salty.
Did you hear that? Did you hear his, I heard it. Did you hear his New York accent come out? Kosher.
It's a kosher turkey.
Kosher turkey.
Okay, so but it's not against kosher law. If I were wanted to do it, it would just taste lousy.
It would be against my
the law of Weinstein.
It would be Dead Sea turkey because you would brine something that it's already essentially brined.
By the way, the number here is 800-348-2551 if you want to chime in here. Bruce Weinstein and Mark Scarborough are here. So if you had a 15, and most of them, you know, if you go to the supermarket, mm-hmm. they're going to have 15% whatever the stuff is.
Right, right.
Can you dry rub them?
Yeah, for the outside. You could put salt on the skin, sure. But you want to look for a turkey that says minimally processed and it doesn't have anything injected into it. Then you brine it because you're controlling what goes in it.
Right. Right?
You're control. And so you need to have, if you're going to do that, you need to brine it yourself. And you need a giant stock pot. If you don't have a pot big enough to hold this turkey and cover it with water, then you might as well buy the kosher turkey or the pre-injected
You got
to
fully cover the turkey.
Absolutely.
Well, I'll tell you what Chef Rick Orlando taught us years ago, and we've been brining turkeys at my house most years. Mm-hmm. You get a cooler.
Okay.
And then, you know, that way.
The cooler will work, but you have to put a ton of ice in it to make sure that the temperature stays at 40 degrees. Because if you put the turkey in a cooler overnight and it doesn't stay under 40 degrees, you're risking
a
little
dish.
Food poisoning.
You have a Petri dish in there.
Oh, really? So that's why I haven't felt well.
now
I understand.
That could be the whole bit. And before Bruce talks about how to brine turkeys, I just want to say, here's one of my big turkey tips, and we can talk about how to do it.
All right.
So if you're not doing anything the Wednesday night before Thanksgiving, go to your local supermarket because the turkeys on the Wednesday night before Thanksgiving have been reduced and reduced until you cannot believe the price. So last year, we actually went out for pizza on Wednesday before Thanksgiving.
Smart.
We went to a big, large, standard chain supermarket that's all over this area, and the turkeys were marked down to 99 cents a pound.
Wow.
And we bought three turkeys at a 15-pound turkey was $15.
I'm sorry, there's two of you. Why do you need three turkeys?
Did I just not tell you I cook turkey all year?
Oh, that's true.
I love turkey.
And we have a big chest freezer, and we throw them in the chest freezer.
Okay, so here's a question. Mm-hmm. Now, a lot of times, you'll get these turkeys that are frozen or close to it.
Yeah.
If you take them and throw them back in the freezer for future use, isn't that refreezing? Isn't
no, because
that dangerous?
It's not thawed. You're buying it frozen. It's
sort
not
of
gonna,
frozen.
What do you mean sort of? When you buy when you pull a turkey out of a supermarket freezer, it's rock hard.
Yeah.
I mean, it is really rock hard. Now, the thing about not refreezing meat, it's kind of a myth.
Really?
You can refreeze meat as long as it has been thawed in the refrigerator and never at room temperature.
And your refrigerator must be set at 40 degrees Fahrenheit.
Well, or lower.
Why?
Because over 40 degrees is the danger zone. So meat that thaws on the counter might have had a chance to have some bacteria start growing, so you don't want to refreeze that. And this rule only goes for whole muscle meats like a roast or a chicken or a turkey, not for ground meat. Ground meat should never be refrozen once it's thawed.
Why?
Because the problem there is introducing bacteria during the grinding process and all that.
Yeah.
So you don't want to refreeze that. But you can refreeze a turkey, a chicken, a roast beef, a pork tenderloin, as long as it was thawed in the refrigerator.
Okay, and never saw a temperature above 40.
And never saw a temperature above 40.
Okay. That Petri dish bit, when we talk about that, jokingly, of course, the Petri dish bit happens between 40 degrees Fahrenheit and 140 degrees Fahrenheit. So as long as you are outside of that range on either side, outside of the 40 degrees or above 140 degrees, you're outside of most of the Petri dish problems.
Okay, devil's advocate here.
Okay.
If you cook it, it's going to be more than 140 degrees.
Yeah.
So even if it did that, why wouldn't cooking it to 300 or whatever temp you're using in your oven kill all that
stuff? Because at that point, it's cooked, but now it's sitting at room temperature again. So cooked food, once you cook food to over 140 degrees, it's safe to eat. But once it comes back to room temperature, because it's sitting on the table, it's on the buffet, the clock starts ticking again.
And
bacteria can start growing.
And bacteria leave This is a family show, right? They leave residue.
Okay.
And when you cook it, the residue can lead to just as much digestive distress as the bacteria themselves.
So, can we end the show? I don't know if I
Ray is never going to eat again.
I'm never going to eat again. You know what I do love, though? But we'll get to your brining recipe
in
a minute.
Yeah, sure.
But what I love best, I'm not, again, turkey, well, whatever. But turkey croquettes, I'm all over it.
Oh. Wow, with ground turkey.
Oh,
do you like turkey burgers?
Not that much.
You know why you like the croquettes? Because they're covered in a breadcrumb and deep
fried, baby.
Yeah.
And so the thing is, apparently, according to my chef, it's a lot of work. And so
it is a lot of work.
Yeah, she works and works and works to make them. But I'd like to go directly to that and not have the sliced turkey.
Well, that's you do that with the leftovers. Yeah, you take the meat, you chop it up, you chop it really fine, and you mix in some egg and some breadcrumbs, and you fry that crispy. So that's another great reason to just make a turkey for the leftovers.
Especially
turkey clubs.
Mm-hmm. All right, before we take a break here, let's talk about, now I know if I buy the 15% broth or solution, I'm not supposed to brine it.
Yep.
Nope.
Even though we have every year. and they're still pretty good. They're a little salty, but they're pretty good. And what we have a minute here before the break.
Okay.
What is your go-to brine?
Well, the basic formula is for every cup of water, a tablespoon of salt. So for a gallon of water, it's a cup of salt. I also like a little bit of sugar. It just gives it a little extra flavor.
No extra spices?
Yeah, a gallon of water, cup of salt, quarter cup of sugar. Mix that together till everything's dissolved. Throw the turkey in that. If it does not cover the turkey, add more water till it's covered, but don't add more salt.
Why? What happens?
Because then you might have too much salt. And if you have time after the break, I could tell you a story about the time I made a turkey that was inedible because I did just that.
That's radio gold. Let's take a break here. Mark Scarborough and Bruce Weinstein are here. It's Thanksgiving pre-prep. If you have a question about anything from the yams to the whatever, call us. 800-348-2551. Maybe you fry a turkey. I'm sure the fellas really love that. We'll be back. It's Joe Pass. 800-348-2551 is the number. It's Food Friday today with Bruce Weinstein and Mark Scarborough. They have written 36 cookbooks. Not one lately, though. I think there's writer's block, but there may be one coming in the summertime. Today we talk about some advanced logistical planning for your Thanksgiving holiday. And, you know, a lot of people, when they brine these birds, they'll put all kinds of stuff, the orange slices.
They do.
And things. So why are you on the list that you sent, it's nothing like
you
that.
You don't need to do that. I mean, you can, if you're going to add spices and you're going to add orange rind, then instead of just dissolving the salt and sugar in the water, you need to bring it to a boil so that those oils from the rind and the spices get into that mixture.
Yeah.
And then you might as well also think about throwing some pickle juice in it. Why not? It works. Because you'll get some extra flavor from those spices. But if you have a really good turkey, you want the turkey flavor. And that's my opinion. I want the turkey flavor. If I want to add other flavors to my turkey, I do it on my plate. Like I'll do a spiced cranberry relish.
Right.
Or I'll do a chutney. And the brining, I'm still a fan of just the salt and the sugar and the water. And as I promised, the year I made the turkey, so the recipe from one of our early books, The Ultimate Cookbook, told you how to do this. You dissolve the water.
Stop.
Yeah.
I just have to say, this is a story about read your recipe.
That is the...
Even when you write it.
Ah. Mm. Okay, this is good. This is
read,
do
go always on. Read through your recipes.
Lesson for living. Here
my
we go.
My own recipe from my own book, and it gets to the bottom of the page. You mix the water with the salt, the sugar, and you dissolve it. You put it in a pot. You put the turkey in it. If it doesn't come up, then the page turns. I didn't turn the page. I know this, right?
Right.
So I mix more water and salt, and I put it in. And more. And I just, by the time I was done, I put like a whole box of salt.
Oh, yeah.
No.
Delicious,
you turn the
right?
page, it says, just add water. Add water to the top. Don't add more salt. So I so oversalted it that when I went to cut it for company, we all ended up eating eggs for dinner because that was inedible turkey.
It tasted like the ocean.
Really?
It tasted like drinking the ocean.
You can't oversalt
it. So that was not good.
No.
I'll never make a turkey in my life. That is a solemn vow. I will never do that.
It's such an easy thing to do. You just shove this thing in the oven.
Dude, I'm not allowed in the kitchen.
Okay.
All right. So
sure.
But are you supposed to This is controversial because I don't know, but I've heard different things. Mm. Are you supposed to wash it off afterwards?
No.
Afterwards? You mean after you unwrap it?
After you brine it.
After you brine it, I like to rinse the excess salt off.
Doesn't that spread salmonella all over the kitchen?
I would not be in favor. So in my house, I would not be in favor
of such a
thing.
Well, his house is my house.
Yeah.
So we will compromise.
So there's going to be an argument then?
No. The turkey will, because I'm cooking, the turkey will come out and it will get blotted dry. You want dry skin when it goes in the oven to help make it crisper and browner. When you it's always best when you're browning any kind of meat, and this works even with steaks and pork chops in a skillet. Blot them dry before you put them in a skillet. They'll brown so much better.
I think that if you want to be the ultimate chefy thing, right, you brine this is your Thanksgiving plan. You brine the turkey on Tuesday. You get it out of the brine on Wednesday. And all day Wednesday, it sits uncovered in the fridge because then you're air drying it and the skin is drying out slightly. And so it's going to get much crunchier when it's roasted. Mm-hmm.
Very interesting. Right? Number here is 800-348-2551 if you want to talk cooking with Bruce and Mark. Or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. So, if you had to choose dry rub or liquid rub or liquid brine,
I'm actually loving the dry brine. I do love it because
that
turkey,
wasn't one of the choices, was it?
Well, I don't know.
He called it a dry rub,
but
dry brining it anyway.
Yeah. Okay,
by rubbing it all with salt inside and out, that is going to be drawn into the turkey, and it draws it in without a lot of extra liquid, and I like that. I want to control the juiciness by the timing and the temperature of the bird.
Mm.
If you brine it so that it will never dry out, you're not going to be so worried about what temperature it cooks at and when you get it out of the oven. But if you overcook it past 165 degrees, that's the moment it's done. So if you dry rub it with the brine, pull it out of the oven at 165. It'll be salty, but still naturally juicy without any added extra liquid.
Okay.
If that makes any sense.
No, it does make sense. Yeah. A lot of times we'll just put Dr. Pepper in the brining, and it works
You put that in everything, don't you?
Oh, my gosh. This was your idea. It was but it was for ham. It was the best ever. We have
Dr.
yet to
Pepper
be able to duplicate it, but it was several years ago now.
Well, that'll be interesting, a Dr. Pepper turkey.
Yeah, Dr. Pepper brine turkey.
Mm.
That's your next book, fellas.
With one recipe in it.
Sure. It's a very short book. All right, that's fine. All right, this email from Henry. Since we're talking turkey, my family this year will try a farm-raised turkey from a local farm.
Nice.
We typically have had frozen turkeys from the store. Are there any adjustments that we should take? In today's show, I've heard a ton about the 15% solution.
Mm-hmm.
Is this something that we should prep before we bake the turkey?
Yes, it is.
This is the turkey, if you're buying it from a local farm like this is the turkey that needs to be brined, as Bruce suggests. The gallon of water, the cup of salt, the little bit of sugar, maybe quarter cup of sugar, and then water to cover the turkey in addition to that. Because it's going to be leaner than a lot of the supermarket turkeys. Mm-hmm. You're going to find that the leanness will really actually require you to be a little more finessed in your cooking. So brining is really important for that bird.
And pay attention to the temperature, because the bird you bought from the store has a built-in fail-safe, right? That 15% solution will keep it from overcooking even if you overcook it.
Right.
Even when you brine this farm turkey, as Mark said, it's less fatty. It's a leaner bird.
Yep.
It's more delicate. You're going to want to take it out once the thermometer hits 165 degrees. When you stick that instant meat thermometer into the thick part of the thigh and deep into the breast meat without touching the bone.
And I think that in general, whatever you usually plan on, if you're going to buy a farm-raised turkey, figure on adding one more side dish to your table, because by and large, these are bonier birds than what you get at the supermarket. You're going to get less meat off of it because the bones are going to be slightly more substantial. So just consider adding one more thing, like green beans, or one more thing to kind of stretch that turkey out. It's just a function of farm-raised turkeys.
But I'm jealous. That's a wonderful thing to have, farm-raised turkey. We're not having turkey this year.
Good for you.
Yeah. Well, my family is descending on us for the first time ever in our house, and they're not huge turkey fans, so we're we're actually doing prime rib. Which
wrong with that.
Which I think is a fabulous Thanksgiving dinner, too.
All right, well, we're going to hold that thought because I still have some questions about, some deep questions about turkey.
Okay.
Wallace. All right, so when you buy I'm not talking about farm-raised. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about you go and it's the frozen, huge whatever. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they have those little weird thermometers built in.
The pop-up thermometers.
Are they just a scam? Do they really work?
They do. They will pop up. They're designed to pop up when the meat at the bottom of them reaches 165 degrees.
So right below there.
Right.
But what about the rest of the bird?
But the rest of the bird should. But they go in pretty deep, about an inch and a half or so. So that's deep enough because birds are hollow unless you've stuffed them. And in fact, I don't recommend using those thermometers if your turkey's stuffed. Only use those thermometers. Trust those thermometers if your turkey is not stuffed.
Okay, so you're okay with those pop-up thermometers.
As long as it's not stuffed.
Okay, so let's get on that topic for a minute. And it's Bruce Weinstein, Mark Scarborough. They are popular. By the way, how's the podcast going?
Podcast is great. Thank you.
You sent one. I get the email blasts on it. What was the topic this last time?
Tree syrups.
Yeah, tree syrups.
All about walnut syrup, birch syrup, beech syrup.
Birch tree syrup.
All syrups beyond maple.
It's sweet and sour. It's fabulous.
Trees. Okay, I'm going to write that down, and so my senile mind, I won't have to remember it. Toward the end of the show, we'll get to that.
Okay.
But let's get back to stuffing the bird.
Uh-huh.
You know, when I was a kid, my mom would, you know, I don't even know how they did it, but they jammed stuff in there. And baked it up. But now I've heard over the last 10, 15 years that this is not recommended.
Well, it can make it more difficult to get an accurate temperature and to get even cooking. And you have to make sure if you're stuffing a bird that the stuffing you made earlier is totally at room temperature, if not cool, when you put it into the bird.
Why is that?
Because if you put warm stuffing into the turkey, that middle of that turkey is going to start warming up into that danger zone Mark talked about, that petri dish zone, before the super hot stuff comes in from the outside and cooks it to safety.
And you must take the internal temperature with an instant meat thermometer of that stuffing.
Yep.
You must stick a probe in there and get the stuffing's temperature because, just think about it, you filled the cavity of the bird with stuffing and essentially you have stuffing with meat insulation. You've got this meat insulation that's going around the stuffing. And what this sometimes leads to, and we do not advocate ever stuffing a bird, but what it leads to sometimes is super dry turkey because you're waiting for the stuffing to come up to the proper temperature.
Mm-hmm.
So because it's insulated in there, and it takes it a while to get up to the temperature.
All right, here's a question. Here's a terminology question. My father-in-law, for years, made stuffing, never put it in the bird. Mm-hmm. Fantastic stuff. Mm-hmm. Do you call it stuffing?
Nope.
No, it's not stuffing,
it's
right?
Dressing. It's That's called dressing. And the reason Mark and I prefer that over stuffing is all about the crunch. Because when you pull stuffing out of a turkey, it's all soft and mushy.
Yeah.
And when you bake that in a 9x13 pan or a larger pan, you get so much oven crunch on it.
So my southern grandmother would roast a turkey this way. She would make a giant, like 9x13 pan of dressing, of cornbread dressing, right?
Right.
She'd make this pan, she would bake it, so it'd be crunchy. She would roast the bird, and then for about the last hour of the bird's roasting, she would take it out of its roasting pan and just set it on top of the dressing in the pan and let it roast on top of the dressing. So the dressing would just fill with turkey fat.
Oh, nice.
And so...
Wow.
Lived into her 90s.
Yeah, she did live into her 90s. And it was like this incredible thing. I don't even think I dare to do that anymore, but that's how she did it.
Isn't it funny how the old school, my grandmother lived to 95 too, but every male in the family, poof, dead early, you know, because of the cooking. 800-348-2551 if you have a cooking question for Mark Scarborough and Bruce Weinstein. 800-348-2551. Yeah, my father-in-law's stuffing. Talk about needing a catheter. It was like sausage, bacon, all this stuff.
Oh
my God. And then you just, I'd eat that more than I'd eat the turkey, frankly. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, no wonder you didn't feel well.
What do you mean? Who said I didn't feel
well? That's a meat stuff. That's a serious meat stuffing.
Oh, so good. We had breadcrumbs and stuff, too.
Yeah.
And onions and everything else.
For me, it's got to have chestnuts, and it's got to have dried cranberries.
Chestnuts.
In it. Oh, I
I've never had that.
What? Have you ever eaten a chestnut?
No.
Oh, my goodness. No. I am a chestnut fanatic.
And
really?
And yet you live here in the epicenter of chestnut dumb.
Really?
Yeah. This part of the world, it's apples and chestnuts.
Yeah, you can smell them when you go down to New York City, but I've never had one.
Yeah. When you get fresh chestnuts, it's always the month of October. Mark, how many pounds of chestnuts did I consume this month of October?
I don't even know. I mean, seriously, every night he'd sit in front of the TV eating chestnuts.
Just chestnuts.
You roast them. Yeah, they come off of a tree from a local farmer's market, and I would just take 30 of them and score them and throw them in the oven and then just sit and eat them with a sliced apple.
What about you?
Me?
Yeah, did you
eat them? Where's that bourbon again?
Yeah, exactly.
Wait a second. No, you ate chestnuts, but who peeled them for you?
Oh, well, marriage is a good thing.
All right. 800-348-2551. Let's go to the phones. Tim and Copaic, you're on.
Hi, guys.
Howdy.
Great show. Thank you for being there. Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, I got a wild turkey this year on turkey season, and I've deboned it. Mm. I saved all the bones for stock, and they're all waiting for me on the side. The stock is beautiful. And what I want to do with this bird, since it's been deboned, I want to lay it flat on top of a cornbread stuffing that's done with andouille sausage.
Mm-hmm.
And then roast that at 250 for about 5 hours, I'd say. Mm-hmm. You think I'm on the right course?
I think you are. I would take a note from Mark's grandmother, though, and roast that turkey as you're going to do it, low and slow, on a big sheet pan. Roast the stuffing separately, and then once the stuffing starts to get a little bit of crunch on it, then transfer that almost cooked turkey to it and finish it off
now,
on top.
Let me ask you a question, Chef. So I'm going to ask Bruce a question.
Sure.
So do you think that wild turkey should be protected in some way, like with bacon, or like the meat should be protected with a rub on it? Because it's going to be super lean.
That's why I'm asking.
It's going to be super lean.
Well, you know, I'm always a fan of the bacon, and you could easily just, when you put that on the roasting pan, the sheet pan, this is a great idea. Lay bacon strips on top of it for that first few hours at the low temperature.
Like upholster it with bacon.
Yeah, like literally upholster it
with bacon.
And then when you go to transfer it to the stuffing, pull that bacon off, you know, save it and brown it in a pan and really eat that. And then crank your oven up for the last hour.
I think actually we'll just eat it in the kitchen.
There you go.
There you go.
And then
go ahead.
That last hour, because now the bacon, the turkey skin's not going to be so crunchy because you had the bacon on it. Crank the oven up and then go hotter. Go to 375. Give it that last hour to brown the skin, to recrunch that stuffing. And that sounds so good. I think I want to go to your house.
Yeah, me
Tim,
too.
Thanks for the call. 800-348-2551. Bacon upholstery. A little full disclosure here. I had a 1978 Chevy van that had bacon upholstery. It was fantastic. Oh my gosh. We're joined today by Bruce Weinstein and Mark Scarborough. It's Thanksgiving prep today. We talk a lot about turkeys. We haven't even gotten to the sides yet, the prime rib and all these other things. But let's go to Kathy in Buskirk. Hello, Kathy in Buskirk. You're on.
Hi. I was wondering if you recommend spatchcocking the turkey for a more even cook.
Well, that will give you a more even cook for sure.
Yep.
And let me even go a step further. If you're totally worried about an even cook, you can spatchcock it. For people who don't know what we're talking about, you're going to cut the backbone out, open it up flat so the legs and the breasts lay flat, all facing up. But you might want to consider actually cutting the leg quarters away from the breast so that they're separate. And that way you can take out the breasts if they reach temperature before the legs. Because sometimes the dark meat might take a little longer. So spatchcocking is a great idea, but also separating the white and dark meat so that you could remove the pieces as they're done.
There's one problem with spatchcocking a turkey, and it's not a big problem, but it's why Bruce is saying this. That inner cavity of the turkey itself does actually heat up with hot air, and so it reaches the oven's temperature inside the turkey, and so it's cooking it from the inside and the outside at the same time. And I realize when you spatchcock it, it is, of course, all in that 350-degree or whatever it is environment, but you are laying part of it down, and so part of it is not in the same hot air environment. So you can have a problem, especially with spatchcock birds, with the breast drying out before the thighs. Not always, but you can depending on the size of the bird.
So just separate the white and the dark after you spatchcock it, and you should have a perfectly evenly cooked turkey.
Yeah, totally.
Kathy, you want to follow up?
Cool. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for the call. 800-348-2551. You know, I remember watching the football games, and John Madden had that turducken thing.
Oh, God.
You guys ever try that?
No.
No, see, the problem is that.
Crime against God and man. That's ridiculous.
Here's the problem. You've got a duck shoved in a chicken, shoved in a turkey,
right.
Or vice versa.
Right.
And each one of those birds has a skin. And the best part of roasted birds is the crispy, crispy, crispy skin.
Isn't that the only part worth eating, really?
So if you take that fatty duck skin, and you put that inside a chicken, and then you put that chicken inside a turkey, what's going to happen to the skin of those inner birds?
Yeah, that duck skin's going to turn into duck jello.
And so it all goes in the turkey, right?
Because
that's the biggest part. Why don't you just fry the duck and fry the chicken and throw it in the turkey?
Oh, well, you
then
pre-cook
it's
going to
get
them.
Gummy. And it's going to get, it's not, I want the crunch. So what can I say? I want the skin crunchy on all those things.
Yeah. Why don't you put cheeseburgers in there or something for people who don't like, you know, all right, let's take a break. 800-348-2551. Bruce Weinstein, Mark Scarborough are here. Thanksgiving is coming, and we're going to get you there. We'll be back. John Schofield, Heel to Toe. That's our music there. It's Vox Pop Food Friday. Ray Graff with you. 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. Or email voxpop@wamc.org. Mark Scarborough and Bruce Weinstein are here. And they're illuminating all these things I didn't know about cooking turkey and didn't really need to know because I never cook a turkey and I never will. All right. Very quickly, before we get to the next call. You're from the South, right? What state? Texas? Where are you from?
Texas.
Do you ever deep fry a turkey there, boy?
I have never deep fried a turkey.
That sounds ridiculous.
Well, I know it is ridiculous. I have had deep fried turkey, but I have never done it myself. I've never did it myself.
I never done did it myself.
Right.
It's public radio. All right. So how does it taste?
I've never watched people do it on TikTok.
Yeah.
And usually it's the fails that you see, all the fail
like
videos.
The house burns down.
Here's the problem. Most people who do it are smart, and they know how to do it, and they know that you only put, you know, a third of a pot of oil because the turkey's going to displace it and it's going to rise. They also know that the turkey should be thawed because you know what happens if you throw ice in boiling oil, or they know it should be dry because the moisture would make the oil explode.
Right.
Then you watch the fail videos. And these people take a pot of boiling oil up to the top, and they try and put a turkey in. And as soon as they do, of course, what happens? The oil overflows, catches on fire, and there goes their driveway.
I did not know any of these things.
You don't watch enough fail videos on TikTok.
When I had deep fried turkey like that, it's okay. It's not, I mean, honestly, I think an oven does a better job of making crunchy skin. And as we have established, the only part I'm really interested in
is
the skin.
Yeah.
So as we've established, that's me.
Okay.
And while it seems like deep frying would do a great job with that, you actually have to take it so far to get the turkey cooked that the skin actually starts to take on an oil taste to it because it's absorbed so much oil at that point, unlike chicken. And so to me, it was very mid. It was really like,
You're talking like my daughters. It's mid, so that's not a good thing, right?
You know, the kids think of me as hip, so...
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I find that hard to believe. 800.
Who's kids?
Certainly not mine, because I've never heard the show. 800-348-2551. That's the number. Let's see, this email from Deborah. I've been invited to Thanksgiving at my son's house and was asked to bring the turkey. It'll be a 3-hour trip. He has a tiny oven, so cooking it there is impractical. Any suggestions on safely transporting and then reheating a cooked bird?
Make the turkey the day before and do like that previous caller said, which is spatchcock it open it up, cut the breast and the legs apart, roast them separately in your home the day before. Then bring them to your son's house cold and left over, but bring a couple of sheet pans that you could put the parts on different layers in the oven so it can all fit, and reheat it at about 300 degrees for about 20 minutes or until warmed through.
Yeah.
There you go.
What do you think of that?
I think it's great. I think that's exactly right. I also think that this woman is being taken advantage of because...
Well, that's what moms do.
Mom,
come
for dinner and bring dinner.
Fine.
All right. My mom did that 1 year. We got Arby's. It was great. Let's go to Michelle Jean in Pine Plains. You're on.
Hi. How are you?
Good. You're on.
Okay. Well, what I do a wild turkey every year, which I shoot usually a few days before, and I pluck it, of course. Then I massage it with yogurt.
Yogurt.
And some spice. Yeah, salt, spice. The yogurt will tenderize the meat and give him a little more fat because a wild turkey, as you know, is not very fatty. And what I do it, I put it on the spit. And I don't stuff it. I keep my stuffing on the side, and my stuffing is basically chestnut.
Chestnuts. The man is French, and the man knows chestnuts. And when you spit roast it, do you baste it?
Well, I baste it first in yogurt,
okay.
You know.
So then,
and
once
then yes, eventually I baste it a little bit, and then at the end, of course, and it cooks slowly because it's on the spit.
Yep.
You know?
Yes. Beautiful.
And that's the way I do it.
I think if you're lucky enough to get a wild turkey, like this guy's shooting his own, but if you could buy one, if you could get
one. Oh,
plenty
of wild turkey this year. They're all over the place.
They are, but not everybody has a gun, and not everybody's willing to both clean it out and pluck it.
Yeah,
so,
or maybe not a good shot.
Or you could try and wring its neck, but that's also...
Your
grandmother used to do that with the chickens.
My grandfather used to do that with the chickens.
They were one step from barbarians.
Well, we've taken a dark turn here. You want to follow up at all there, Michelle Jean?
No, it's fine. I just wanted to... what I do, that's all.
Thanks a lot for the call.
It sounds perfect to me. I personally think that wild turkeys benefit from a lot of spice. So when we've had wild turkeys in the past, we've served them with mole, the Oaxacan chili chocolate sauce. We've served them with all kinds of really intense, spicy sauces. Because the meat is strong. It's, you know, it's got a distinct flavor.
Have you guys ever cooked a wild turkey vulture?
No.
Never
delicious.
Cooked a vulture.
Oh, my gosh.
No, I don't tend to eat your carrion fowl.
Fine. When did you eat a vulture?
I didn't. I'm just giving you a hard time. 800-348-2551. That's our telephone number. So our last caller cooked a turkey on a spit, and it's over an open fire, and
well,
it turns.
It may be an open fire. It may be over a gas grill. It may be over a charcoal grill. We didn't ask him the details.
You know what? I should have followed up.
I like to spit roast a turkey, too, and I do that occasionally on my gas grill. And gas grill.
How huge is it?
My gas grill is quite large, and it's got this beautiful spit with a built-in motor, and there's even a side box for wood chips, so I can give it a little hint of smoke, and it's really yummy.
Yeah, he's got a honking big.
So you're like
grill.
The James Bond of cooking. You have step over here, 007. It's an enormous grill with a spit
and a smoke box.
800-348-2551 or voxpop@wamc.org. Grayson writes in, turkey breast is a subject heading. One way I've used is to start roasting the bird on a rack with the breast side down. Then when the dark meat is almost done, turning over the turkey so the breast is up. It allows the entire bird to be done at the same time. I use two large wooden spoons inserted into the cavities to lift and rotate the bird. Sound logical to you guys?
It does. A lot of people do an upside down bird for the first half of the cooking. I do find that sometimes it keeps the breasts from drying out. He uses wooden spoons to turn it, and that can work. I find the biggest problem about doing a turkey that way is the turning it part.
They're heavy.
They're filled with juice, which is superheated. You're likely to spill
juice
it, and you could burn yourself. So it's a difficult thing. My suggestion to anyone who wants to do an upside-down turkey and turn it is to get yourself some oven gloves that are meant to handle hot food.
Silicone gloves.
And then turn it by hand.
Okay.
You'll have much more control than sticking
not
spoons in.
Not cloth gloves.
No.
No, a bad idea.
And not
I've seen them catch on fire, which is very exciting.
And not thin surgical gloves.
Right.
Thick, heavy gloves.
So, you know, our last caller cooked turkey on a spit. You've done the same thing, Bruce. And also, if you're frying a bird, it all goes in at once. So that's more even cooking, theoretically, right?
Theoretically.
Well, it's theoretically. Even, yes, but no. I mean, it'll all cook at the same time, but you might, and you, even with
then
spit
why
roasting,
flip it?
Well, the flipping it part is because when it's upside down, right, the breast is kind of protected, right? The hot air is circling around the bottom of the bird and the legs, and you're not letting the breast part get hit with that hot air and brown until the end.
I also find that the flipping thing tends to work on birds under 10 to 12 pounds. Mm-hmm. I mean, in a bird 10 to 12 pounds or less, I think that the flipping is not necessarily so necessary. Mm. It's above 12 pounds where I think it's totally necessary, because then you get those honking big thighs and those Henry VIII drumsticks, and all that stuff takes much more time to cook. And so you can overcook the breast badly in like a 17-pound bird.
And then here's the next thing that people have to discuss too. Would you rather make 2 small 9-pound turkeys or 1 giant 22-pound turkey?
I would go with 2 9.
I would too.
I would,
the bigger the bird, the more difficult it's going to be to cook it properly and get it juicy.
Correct.
All right. Number here is 800-348-2551. Quickly here, as we get to our next call, what side dishes do you guys use, or what will you be using?
You have prime rib this year. You know what? We're going to make massive trays of roasted root vegetables. So parsnips, sweet potatoes, shallots, Brussels sprouts, just like these massive trays, because we're feeding, 11 or something? So we're going to just make 3 big sheet pans of roasted vegetables and put them out. I grew up from the South. We had the sweet potato casserole with the marshmallows on top.
Right.
And sweet potato casserole mixed with canned pineapple and pecans.
Ooh, genius. Okay, good. I'll write that down.
Marshmallows on top.
Insulin for dessert.
Yeah,
Metformin on the side. Good thing.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's cool, man. That's a really good idea.
Yeah, and I think I'll probably do some kind of crunchy slaw. So there's some, like, a fresh vegetable. Like, I'll do a broccoli slaw with pomegranate seeds and a little orange. And that'll give us some fresh brightness along with the soft roasted vegetables.
But, of course, you'll be doing prime rib this year.
Oh, we're doing prime rib. And the secret to prime rib is you put it in the oven at 175 degrees, if your oven can go that low. If not, 200. And you leave it there, like, for hours and hours until the internal temperature hits 120. The outside's going to look raw.
Yeah.
That's okay.
Yes. Totally raw.
You take it out. You let it sit 1 hour. Then you shove it back in a 500-degree oven for 10 minutes, and it gets brown and sizzling and crisp, and it is rare.
It's rare.
From the bones to the top.
So it's rare.
None of that gray, well-done bits.
You know, I know these guys who did books about Instapots, and frankly, you could do your prime rib right in there.
Why would you kill the prime rib in an Instapot?
Maybe a lot of people aren't going to know this word I'm going to say. My grandmother would say that's a shanda.
What's a shanda?
A Yiddish word for that's a shame. That's a waste.
I'm kidding.
Of a
you guys
rib.
Wrote the book.
Yeah, but you don't do a prime rib.
Oh, why not?
Because
it's chapter 17 in your book. I remember that.
Oh God.
Let's go back to the phones. Deb and Catskill, you're on.
Hi there. I am 65, but I still love my side dish of yams with marshmallows.
Mm-hmm.
I've started to add roasted pecans to them. Mm-hmm. But is there a more adult version that you might recommend? Do I have to make the marshmallows by hand?
Okay, if you want to make the marshmallows by hand, go to our YouTube channel, Cooking with Bruce and Mark, and there's a video of me making marshmallows.
Oh, cut it out.
And you can see how to do that. We also have a book called The Ultimate Candy Book, which teaches you how to make homemade marshmallows. I have never put homemade marshmallows on sweet potatoes, but boy, that sounds good.
I think that one of the things that you can do for your pecans and your sweet potato casserole is add some kind of chili sauce to it, and I think that would make it much more adult. So if when you put your puree into the baking dish and you're going to bake it, add some, you could add
gochujang.
Some gochujang, which is a Korean chili paste. You could add some of that sweet red Thai chili sauce to it, just a little. Anything like that that can kind of bump up the heat, the spiciness, will make it slightly more adult than, you know, the standard sweet potato.
Who needs
casserole.
Adult, though, Deb? Well, just do it how you like it.
I'm answering a question.
I know. I spell adult A-D-U-L-L.
I like it. Okay.
Yeah, well, just do it the old-fashioned way, the kiddie way.
Chocolate chips. Oh. I tell you, man. Chocolate chips.
Put some Captain Crunch on there and go to town.
There you go.
Hey, thanks a lot for the call. Appreciate it. 800-348-2551. Okay, one more email, and then I got to hear a little bit about the tree syrups from your podcast. Kay writes in, just wanted to share. My mother-in-law cooked her turkey, approximately 12 pounds, in a covered roaster. Mm-hmm. Just herbs and veggies in the cavity. Basting every 30 minutes, removing the cover for the last 30 to brown, always moist with crispy skin.
Mm-hmm. True. Covered will give you moist because all that steam staying in there. And perhaps that skin was crispy and brown, but in my opinion, 30 minutes is not going to make it brown and crispy enough for my taste.
Yeah.
So if I'm going to cover it that way, I'm going to give it a minimum of an hour uncovered.
Because when I say crispy, I'm talking partial carbonization.
Yeah.
So I want, like, you know, some blackened spots, right? Like when I order my pizza, I order my pizzas burnt.
Really?
Not well done, but burnt. I want to see black.
I order French fries the same way.
So there you
burn
go.
Them. Burn them.
I had no idea you guys were so demented.
All right,
so once again, the podcast is called something.
Cooking with Bruce and Mark.
All right, you did a thing on tree syrup, so we got 2 minutes left here. Tell me about
Everybody knows maple syrup, right?
Yeah.
It's the sap from a maple tree boiled down. But you can get sap from other trees and boil it down. One of our favorites is from the white birch tree.
Yeah.
And you buy birch syrup, and it's black. It almost looks like molasses, but thinner. And it's sweet, but it has a little sour edge. I would not put it on pancakes, but I'll throw it in cocktails, a few drops in a Manhattan, a few drops in a margarita. It's amazing.
There may be producers in this area of this stuff, but you can get hickory syrup. You can get black walnut syrup. You can get beech syrup. These are all way more sophisticated. These are not for the third grade set.
Because they're more expensive.
Yeah.
Right.
And they're,
but does that make them more sophisticated?
They have slightly bitter notes. They have tannic notes. They have sour notes, especially like black walnut and hickory, and as Bruce said, birch syrup. These things are really wild. Just a little birch syrup or black walnut syrup in a Manhattan makes a spectacular cocktail.
Right. Now, the black walnut is from a black walnut tree, right? It's a sap from the tree. You're not making the syrup from the nut.
Right.
So the syrup doesn't have a nutty taste. It has a tree flavor, just like maple syrup actually tastes like the sap.
Yeah.
So black walnut syrup, and it takes a lot more of the sap boil it down, where maple syrup can be like 40 or 50 to 1, a part sap to syrup. With beech syrup, 100 to 1. With black walnut, 80 or 90 to 1. Yeah. So you got to really boil it down.
We spoke to a producer in Alaska a long time ago for an article in Gourmet, and they were making birch syrup, and they had, what, like 50 acres?
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, honestly, they were maniacs because they were trying to tap 50 acres of birch trees.
That's a lot
of
trees.
And it was insane the amount of work that would be required to them to make even just a bottle of birch syrup.
But a lot of people mix birch syrup with maple syrup to sort of give you a bit of that flavor without being overpowering.
And could you tell the difference?
I could tell the difference, but it's a good way to get people started on something like a birch syrup is to find someone who has a blend, because then you'll start to go, this is really interesting and different. And we do episodes like that on the podcast because we love finding new and interesting
foods. We know tree syrup producers in Vermont and in northern New England. There are people doing this stuff.
Yeah. All right. Well, listen, we're out of time just about. But once again, if people want to follow Bruce Weinstein and Mark Scarborough, they have the podcast, which is, again, called Cooking with Bruce and Mark. And then you have a website.
It is also Cooking with Bruce and Mark. You can also just put in bruceandmark.com. It'll come to the same place. Our TikTok channel, same name.
You're
Cooking
on TikTok.
Cooking with Bruce and Mark. Yeah.
You guys are old. What are you
doing?
I'm not mid.
I'm on TikTok.
All right. That's it. We're done. Hey, guys, thanks for coming.
Thank you.
You have a book coming out
in July, Cold Canning. A new way to preserve the season without hot water processing.
All right, man, let's book a show for July. Thank you for being here. Have a great holiday. Support comes from Body Work Professionals, licensed massage therapist, Albany, Saratoga Springs, Niskayuna, Nick Pavaldi. Structural Integration Practitioner, Rolfer Proprietor, 518-MASSAGE or BodyWorksProfessionals.com. Saratoga Restaurant Equipment Sales, 27 years supplying restaurants and commercial kitchen facilities, also offering project design, installation, and repair services, SaratogaSales.com. And Rolling Rock Farm Salt and Seasonings, working to spread peace, love, and happiness with handcrafted in small batches infused sea salts, pepper, and blends, specializing in black garlic, RollingRockSalt.com. Once again, thanks to Bruce Weinstein and Mark Scarborough for being here today. Thanks for listening. Thanks for the calls. Thanks for the emails. Thanks to Dr. Norman Konarkiewicz, who screened the calls today. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. I'm Ray Graff. Oh, you have yourself a lovely weekend. We'll see you Monday at 2 for Medical Monday.